Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you from the wonderfully cozy studio at the back of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And you are listening to Good Food, where for the next few weeks we'll be talking with people who are using food as a vehicle for social good. I am your host, Daniel Meyer, and I'm very excited to be joined today by Jordan Lexton and Annie Bickerton, the women behind a pretty fantastic project in the works called Drive Change. Jordan is the founder and executive director, and Annie is the director of development. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having us, Daniel. We're really thrilled.
Really happy to be here.
My pleasure. So I said in my little intro that this was a show about people using food as a vehicle for social good. That, of course, is just a turn of phrase, except in your case where it actually isn't. You are hoping to construct a literal vehicle for social good, you know, the kind that you can take out on the street and drive around. So tell us, what are you up to? What is Drive Change?
So Drive Change is a food truck business that hires formerly incarcerated youth, teaches a transferable skills curriculum, and also advocates for youth justice reform in New York State. And so you're right. It is literally a vehicle for social justice and for social change. We're very, very excited about our upcoming release onto the New York City streets this upcoming summer, in the summer of 2013.
Okay, so you're looking forward to getting this truck out on the street this coming summer. Let's backtrack for a little bit. Where did this project arise? You did some teaching, Jordan, on Rikers Island. Is that right?
Yeah, I was a teacher on Rikers Island for 3 school years, and it was actually there that I first learned that adolescents ages 16 were automatically arrested as adults in New York State. My classroom was full of 16 to 18-year-old young men who had been detained as adults, and I realized that this was actually a huge problem because instead of leaving the system with an adjudication as a juvenile, they'll leave with felony convictions. And so in terms of future opportunities by way of employment and education, there's a lot of restriction that's embedded with having an open felony on your record. So I would see so many kids recycle back into the system, just come back and come back and come back. And I realized that we needed to do something in this time of reentry, this really fragile time, to address the vast needs of kids and provide them with the tools to live crime-free, productive lives. And I vowed that I would create this program, and the idea of doing a food truck emerged about a year and a half ago. And I've had the pleasure of having Annie Bickerton as my director of development for about 6 months now.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't come across a lot of people who have done teaching at prison, so I'm going to dwell on that for just a second. How long were you there? What were you teaching them? Who were these kids that you kept coming across, and when did you begin to realize that sort of the system was broken, that they were leaving and that they were coming back?
Yeah, so I taught, there's actually a New York City public high school on Rikers Island because of the fact that New York, which is soon to be the only state to automatically arrest 16-year-olds as adults, has
the only state
soon
in the
to be yeah
country.
Right now it's just North Carolina and New York.
Wow.
But as a result of that, there was a legal action that took place that required public high schools to be implemented inside of adult facilities that detain adolescent youth. So the District 79 of New York City DOE has a school called East River Academy out on Rikers Island. And I was an English teacher there teaching this adolescent young male population from the fall of 2009 to February of 2012.
And you said, when we talked the other day, you had said that some of the things you saw there were unpleasant, to say the least. There was a lot of violence. There were the kids, the correctional officers there weren't equipped to deal with teenagers, with kids as young as 16, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to having a law that really does provide serious insurmountable hurdles for kids once they're released, the actual conditions of adult jail are really very traumatic. I knew within 5 minutes of my first day teaching on Rikers Island that adult jail and prison was no place for kids. As you mentioned, you know, not only are kids in these conditions with adult inmates, but the officers who are working with them aren't trained appropriately to work with adolescents. So all of the punitive measures that are associated with the adult system apply to these young people who are currently incarcerated. Whereas in other states where you have systems and modalities that support more rehabilitative measures for younger offenders, that just doesn't apply to the adult criminal justice system in New York. Yeah, to say the least, I saw really terrible things inside of Rikers. It's proven that young people who are incarcerated adults are more likely to be both physically and sexually assaulted, and they're also much more likely, 36 more times likely, to commit suicide. Wow. On top of that, young people who leave the system are more likely, 85% more likely, to go on to commit violent crimes in the future, as opposed to young people who go through at the same age with the same kinds of criminal background behavior who are go through the juvenile system. The young kids who go through the adult system are 85 times more likely, percent more likely, to commit violent crimes in the future. And so that becomes not only an issue for the recidivism rates of youth, but also it becomes a public safety issue and an economic issue as well, because it costs so much to incarcerate young people as adults. And I knew working inside Rikers that I needed to find a voice and needed to find a vehicle for communicating some of these really devastating aspects of the criminal justice system. But I also really wanted young people that I had spent time with to be the voice of that change themselves. And the truck allows for that kind of self-empowerment and self-advocacy that I believe is really important, that people directly impacted by issues are the voice of change.
Okay, so you're at Rikers, and you find this kind of one size fits all approach to incarceration just does not work for these youngest offenders, and you decide that you need to do something about it, and you decide on a food truck. Why a food truck? What is it about a food truck or food in general that sort of suits your goals with this project? Why is food an accommodating place to try to re-enter these kids into society as opposed to any other places where you might try to find them employment?
There are a couple of really concrete reasons for that. The culinary arts as a field tends to be very receptive to formerly incarcerated people in general. And also, it's a place where transferable skills can be taught that can really go on to provide people with tools they need to not reoffend or allow for former behaviors to still influence their actions. On top of which, food has always been a place for me personally and for many that is it really is a tool to help build community. One thing that I found, I'm an athlete, and I found the same thing true with sports. Mm-hmm. But basically, you know, people can sit around a table, and if there's good food there, it has the ability to pull very disparate people from unbelievably different backgrounds together over a meal. So with that in mind, and the spirit of the show embodies that, we using food as this tool to draw on that notion of community seemed to be a really good fit. On top of that, the food truck itself, the program is modeled after some programs that exist in the West Coast, like Homeboy Industries in LA and mm-hmm. Mission Pie in San Francisco, that use a revenue-generated organization style to employ and train their own members within the food business world, but they're both stoic entities. The mobility of the food truck really makes us one of a kind. Speaking of community, it allows us to get out into the New York City communities and really educate people about what the current issues are surrounding youth justice, but also connect people through the vehicle of food. So that aspect of a food truck seemed very appealing to me. The advocacy piece being a part of it, but also really our ability to get out there and get out to all different communities in New York City and give them this really wonderful food that we're going to create on our food truck.
Right. You can literally spread your message, driving it around from one borough to another.
Exactly.
Okay, Annie, I want to get to you for a second. Yeah. So you guys you've recognized this problem with the youth criminal justice system that you need to address. You found a very innovative and creative way to address it. Now what? As the director of development, what's your role in sort of in facilitating the project from from its inception to making it reality? What do you do, and what has that experience been like?
Yeah, well, I think the joy of the food truck is that there are some major advantages versus opening, for example, a restaurant, which has a much higher overhead. It's a more competitive market, and it's a lot harder to kind of maintain long-term viability. So the food truck is great because in terms of the startup costs, we're really at an advantage for the fundraising we have to do. But fundraising there's a lot of reentry organizations in New York. And one thing we really don't want to do is just provide more competition for funding. So, the joy of a revenue generating model for our program is that we're doing a lot less of that. But yeah, right now, Jordan had secured a wonderful food truck designer, Shanghai Stainless, just a block away, a stop away at Montrose in Bushwick.
And they're the ones who they're the main food truck engineers and designers for a lot of the ones that we see driving around New York, right?
Exactly. So Eddie is our food truck, Ernie is our food truck designer, and he's been amazing. We're really kind of experimenting and trying to take in a lot of inspiration. We've been going on some drives around Brooklyn, taking pictures of restaurant interiors and things like that for our ideas. And there's a bunch of pieces that are in the works. Part of it is getting support from the reentry community and from the criminal justice community. Jordan has really invested a lot of time in building those connections and relationships, and we're really lucky for that. And I think that's putting us in a wonderful place. And then it's building relationships in the food truck world. So we have a relationship with the New York Association of Food Trucks, which is kind of an informal, almost union of food trucks. And it's nice because it's an entrepreneurial community, and they hear about our cause, and everyone we talk to in the food truck world is really supportive and excited about what we're doing.
That's great. And the process of actually securing enough funding through grants or fellowships or other avenues, how has that been? Have you been able to find that there's money streaming in, that it's hard to compete with these other reentry organizations?
Well, actually, we're really thrilled that we just found out we won a grant challenge through my university, where Yay. I'm in graduate school at the Milano School.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that is
so
fantastic.
Thanks to the New School for that. And that's hopefully going to open some doors with funders for us. Jordan was up bright and early this morning submitting our application for as a semi-finalist for a Black Male Achievement Award through the Echoing Green Foundation, which does huge social entrepreneurship grants, and that's really launched a number of very successful programs all around the U.S. So we're really hopeful that that could really be sort of our break into some really wonderful support from the philanthropic world.
That's really great.
Yeah.
Maybe this is an unfair question since you yourselves are in the throes of trying to get your project off the ground, but I imagine that there are plenty of people, maybe even some people listening, who have ideas for sort of social entrepreneurship projects, either through food or other, and are wondering how to go about securing money to fund their projects. Do you have any advice in the early stages of your project for other people who might want to do the same?
Absolutely. I mean, I think part of it is really about building relationships and just talking to everyone in every piece of the world that you're working in. And I think the beauty of sort of social entrepreneurialism is that it does bridge different worlds. So, you know, food and social good, there's so many different sort of resources to tap into, especially here in New York where people really care about those things. But, you know, there's a lot of really wonderful kind of think tanks and communities of social entrepreneurs here. So Echoing Green is one. There's Ashoka. There's a few sort of major ones in New York. And I think actually one of my Milano graduates is starting a workspace for social entrepreneurs soon too. So we've been really excited to tap into that and meet other people who are doing similar things.
Just to piggyback off of that, I think that that word relationships is so essential. One thing certainly it would be like concretely would be identifying the different stakeholders that you would need to engage in order to ensure that your program is really successful. So that's definitely one thing that I am proud to say that I spent time doing, really thinking about what that end was and what backwards design I needed to do in order to make sure that once the funding was there, we were really ready to get Drive Change out on the streets. So for us, it was, you know, the food truck world, as Annie mentioned, and I worked on the kimchi taco truck for 7 months to learn the business, not just to jump into it blind, because, you know, even with that entrepreneurial spirit, there are concrete things that you need to learn about working in the food industry that I otherwise would not have known. And then, as Annie mentioned, really building those relationships in other reentry organizations and networks. We have established our host organization is the Center for Employment Opportunities, which is a very large and well-known, very established reentry organization that helps support people coming out of jail and prison find employment. So they've actually agreed to allow us to have space, access to phones, computers, programs, staff support, and it's really been hugely beneficial for us. And then, as Annie mentioned, really like just not being afraid to engage in conversation with people. You'd be so fascinated to find how many people might have similar interests and ideas that you maybe wouldn't have thought of. So once again, like finding out those stakeholders, inserting yourself in those fields, building those relationships, and then opening your mouth.
Okay, so now that we've opened our mouth, we're going to take a quick break here. We are in studio with Jordan Lexton and Annie Bickerton from Drive Change. We will take a quick break, and when we get back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the food. This is a food truck. We're going to talk about the food.
We'll be right back.
Yay.
Make a sound. Well, I don't know, baby. Now something's changed, you know what I
You're listening to When It Was Wrong by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
We were hiding out, just a sneaking out, for it or make it out. Now that you're here to stay, you know the thrill is gone. I liked it better when it was wrong.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Woo-hoo, baby, do you remember when we were hiding out, or just a sneaking out, falling or making out? Now that you're here to stay, you know the thrill is gone. I liked it better when it was wrong.
We are back. You are listening to Good Food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Daniel Meyer, and we have been talking with Jordan Lexton and Annie Bickerton about their project Drive Change, which, if you missed it, is a food truck in the works that is going to employ formerly incarcerated youth from Rikers Island and elsewhere, maybe, or just Rikers Island?
No, from elsewhere as well. Any young people who are formerly incarcerated and involved in the criminal justice system.
So we've talked a little bit about the background that gave rise to the need for this this truck. We've talked about sort of a little of the infrastructure and the fundraising, creating the relationships that sort of can get this project off the ground. now we'll get to the meat of it. Maybe it's not meat. Maybe it's something else. Your business is a food truck. To a large extent, sort of the success of this depends on the food, what you're serving, how people relate to it, how they like it. So what's on the menu?
Yeah, that's the big question. And, you know, we wouldn't have I wouldn't have thought of a food truck if I wasn't such a foodie at heart. One thing that I, in all these different ideas about social entrepreneurship, came to mind was this idea of food, and then the mobility of the food truck struck home. But my aunt actually is a television producer, and she produces the show The Best Thing I Ever Ate on the Food Network.
Okay.
So I was watching an unedited version of one of their shows, and this item called sugar on snow, which is actually hot maple syrup poured directly over fresh snow, and the temperature combination creates this ooey, gooey, delicious maple taffy that I had once had when I was like a 12-year-old in Mont-Tremblant, Canada, and I had still lingered in my taste buds and in the taste buds of like my mind and heart.
Wow.
So I was thinking about how throughout all of the different food options in New York City, I'd never had this here. And I thought that it would be an item that would translate well to kind of a whimsical element of putting on a food truck. With the help of Annie and others, I've really, what we've done is we've developed that concept now using maple syrup as our central linking ingredient for the food truck to build a savory and sweet menu that is tied together through that primary food ingredient of maple syrup. So, for example, some items on the menu are a maple bacon Brussels sprout side and a slow roast slow roast pulled pork sandwich soaked in maple syrup. And then on the more sweet side, we're going to do the maple taffy with fresh snow, which is a really nice aesthetic contrast between like the industrialization of mass incarceration and these pure elements. At the end of the day, it's just snow and tree, really. So, and then we're actually doing these things called apple skivers, which are like spherical pancake balls that you can fill with a variety of ingredients to be
from Denmark, right?
Yeah, originally. Yep, they're Danish. So those are the staples we've kind of figured out, but that maple syrup will be our central lacing ingredient, and with the help of Annie and others, really pushing forward that business and food, the agenda of that food business as the predominant force in this initiative. If that product isn't great, we're not going to be able to sustain the kind of programming we want to.
Right. It's interesting what you said about sort of the stark contrast between the dark maple syrup and the light snow, and that sort of, you know, an allegory for the kind of incarceration work that you're doing. Is that something that you will be spreading to people along with your food? Is that something that you hope that people get implicitly? What's the balance between food and message that you're trying to spread around?
Well, we definitely want our menu and the quality to sort of be the foot forward in our business.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that we will be doing is the truck will be outfitted with LCD screens with multimedia about incarceration and reentry in New York. The other thing that we will also have is food packaging that's designed with information about incarceration for youth in New York. So part of it is about sort of using the benefits of a customer interaction to educate the public and our customers, and to use the visibility of the truck even just on the street as a way to sort of subtly start engaging people in conversation about this. So we really feel like it's initiating a conversation. It's not necessarily a lecture. It's not like every time you buy a maple snow taffy, you get a 5-minute class about it. But it's really something that we want to strike a balance between sort of the education, but also, you know, keep people coming back for the food.
Right. That idea of being lectured is interesting, because sometimes you hear people say, I want my food. I want it to be good and I want it to be hot. And you don't want to get, a full crash course into food politics or into, you know, workers' rights or into sort of criminal justice when you get your food. How receptive do you think people will be to sort of merging merging the experience of dining, which is primarily a, you know, a pleasureful one, with sort of something a little weightier, a little heavier and more background.
I think that the movement in food right now in New York and really in the U.S. is about how food relates to our values. And I think people are really thinking deeply about how what they're putting into their body and the way that they're producing food ties to those values. So I think that one of the beautiful things about the food world here is that it's really about so many bigger issues. And I think that audiences here are really invested in that. You know, they want quality, but they also really want to feel good about it and feel like they're supporting things that they believe in. And I think that using food, which is a part of our everyday life, as a way to support social good is something we can all feel great about and get behind. So I do think that people are receptive, and I think that they're going to be excited to support us. And I know that, you know, other sort of food businesses that involve reentry or sort of job training are very successful because people really care about it, and it's very human. And I think that one thing that we're lacking in our food in most of America right now is a level of humanity. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And also, you know, one thing we're really conscious of and trying to do is to use very local and organic food products. We have relationships with upstate New York farmers because upstate New York...
It's almost a prerequisite at this point for the kind
of
work that you're getting into.
We're calling it farm to truck ready.
Very, very good.
New York State is actually a huge maple syrup provider.
Right.
It's the third behind Canada and Vermont, but people really don't know about it. So one thing that the truck can do, too, is promote these local businesses in upstate New York communities, you know, and that will open up, will bolster the economy and potentially, we're hoping in the long run, might actually detract from some of the stability that upstate New York communities have on jobs being created by the criminal justice system and by prisons that exist in small towns, and wean that dependence off of those jobs and hopefully back on to the farmers. That's something that other organizations have tried to do as well. One example is one here called Milk Not Jails. But we're really focused on making sure that the product, we know exactly where it's coming from, and we also use it as a way to support those local farmers.
It's fantastic. You have a full loop project. It starts in the city and it goes up to the farms, and it sort of affects the incarceration rate at every turn. It's great. So if you don't mind, let's peer into the future a couple months. It's mm-hmm. summer. Let's say you've got all the funding you need. You have a shiny new tricked out food truck. It's, you know, you have enough money to keep it stocked with gas and fully staffed. What's the process now of training these formerly incarcerated kids, I guess I'll call them. New York says they're adults, but if they're 16, I'll say they're kids. What's the process like of training them to not only re-enter society, re-enter a community that might be very different from the one that they just came from, and train them to work on a truck? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Annie mentioned before, I've spent the past year inserting myself into the world of re-entry, and I've worked for a number of different organizations and learned about the successful components that contribute to a formula that really does help people re-enter society, and specifically now tailoring one to impact young people directly. We will be working with people who are age 16 to 25. So while we will want to target even those younger kids, there will be a little bit of a broader age range in the actual program. And what we're using is, our model is using a program that's 8 months long.
Okay.
And it breaks down into three phases. So the first phase is actually before the kids work on the truck, that's where the training comes in. It's what we're calling our pre-truck training phase. And here, kids will acquire skills and actually obtain licenses and credentials, such as the New York City Food and Safety Handler's license, and really learn the tools they need to be successful working on the food truck. It actually culminates in a one-week mini internship working on the truck to deem themselves truck ready, is what we're calling
it. Okay.
The next element that's really important for lowering recidivism, on top of providing people with concrete transferable licenses and skills, is paying people. Paid transitional employment is essential to lowering the rate of recidivism. And the word recidivism just means reoffense. Right. So people who either are rearrested or ultimately end up being reincarcerated. To lower that, actually handing people money, not for work,
right,
but really providing people with dollars in their pocket has been proven to be an essential part of lowering the rate of recidivism. Of the 70% of people that recidivate, 89% are unemployed at the time of their rearrest. So we're taking that to heart. And the second phase of the truck is a 4-month-long transitional work phase where young people will partake in 4 different job roles that are associated with working on the food truck, and they will actually be the employees on the food truck itself. To go along with those jobs, we're teaching a transferable skills mini course throughout that program that's rooted in transferable skill learning, but specifically teaches within culinary arts, social media marketing, and money management and accounting. While on the truck, kids will have that gain that practical experience of working, engaging with the customers, and develop skills that will help them when transitioning into future educational and employment opportunities. And that is our third phase. It's the transition phase. We intend to work with small numbers, especially to begin with. So our first cohort of students will only be 8 to 10 kids. But we can run our 8-month program, the 3 phases, 3 times a year.
Okay.
So we tend to impact the lives of directly of 30 young people per year.
And are you going to recruit the participants, or is this something that they'll learn about that they'll apply for?
Yeah, they'll apply. So these programs that we've created relationships with, like the Center for Employment Opportunities, an alternative to incarceration program called CASES, the Fortune Society, the Osborne Association, and the Department of Corrections themselves,
mm-hmm,
will actually refer young people to us, and through the application and then an interview process, we'll select the young people. So while it's 30 kids per year, that's per truck. So as we grow and hopefully replicate, we can serve 30 kids per year per vehicle. And that a whole time, we're really balancing it all with individual mentorship and counseling, which has been proven to lower the rate of recidivism. And those group leaders who are licensed social workers will be present with the kids while they're working on the truck as well.
It's fantastic. Okay, we are almost out of time. One last thing before I let you guys go.
Mm-hmm.
When and where can we look forward to seeing the Drive Change food truck rolling around New York City?
That's a great question. We're in the process of purchasing and designing a truck, so we really hope to be up and running this summer. You will soon be able to visit our website, drivechangenyc.org, and we'll also be conducting some events over the summer, so definitely keep an eye out for us, and we'll be online and doing some media and marketing over the summer for
them. Yeah, one thing that's great about our organization is that we can actually build different brands for every truck we create. So the first truck is actually called the Snow Day Truck, and we can build that platform and expand our menu moving forward. But look for us this summer in both Manhattan and Brooklyn.
All right, drivechangenyc.org, and then this summer rolling around Manhattan, the Drive Change Truck. Jordan, Annie, thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank
you, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.